Hello, and welcome back to the Bentley Priory Museum podcast. My name is Alexander, and I'm here as your host for this episode. This podcast has been established alongside a temporary exhibition called Bentley Priory's Bunker, Defending Britain from Nazi and Nuclear Threat. Bentley Priory Museum is currently running this project to investigate its top secret underground bunker, which was used both in the Second World War and the Cold War periods. This project wouldn't have been possible without the funding given to the museum by the National Lottery Heritage Fund. This podcast will be highlighting some of the exciting stories of the personnel who worked down in the bunker. This episode is called The Artist. We will be focusing on the painting Angels 3-0, by Douglas Chowns, featuring the operations room at RAF Bentley Priory. We will hear from Dougie as he explains the mystery of two unidentified aircraft flying in British airspace during the time of increased international tension, also learning about the important role that the Women's Auxiliary Air Force and the RAF personnel working on the ground at RAF Bentley Priory played. With a background in graphic design, Dougie was attached to the tactical intelligence operations in the bunker for his 2 years of national service between 1955 to 1957, during the Cold War and the Suez Crisis. Tasked with setting up an in-house design department, Dougie and his team produced instant plotting table solutions responding to issues that arose in the operations room. Now based in New Zealand, and still just as passionate about art, Dougie discusses his painting and his unique experience of life in the bunker during a series of remote interviews with one of our project volunteers. So I invite you to sit back and listen as the story behind Angels 3-0 unfolds. We are now joined by Project Volunteer Tim, who will give us an overview of Cold War history leading up to and during the time that Dougie was in the bunker, followed by a personal account from the man himself.
The late 1940s and 1950s saw growing tension in the Cold War between East and West. The Berlin airlift of 1948 to 1949 followed the Soviets preventing access to West Berlin, the city being in what was then East Germany, necessitating the supply of food and essential materials by air along narrow air corridors. The detonation of the first Soviet nuclear weapon in 1949 caused consternation in the West. In 1950, communist North Korea invaded South Korea, giving rise to the Korean War of 1950 to 1953, involving United Nations and United States forces. In 1953, the Soviets detonated their first hydrogen or thermonuclear bomb. The West's lead in what was becoming the nuclear arms race was being eroded far more rapidly than anyone had anticipated. Then, at the end of October 1956, came conflict in the Middle East, when France, the United Kingdom and Israel responded to Egypt's seizure of control of the Suez Canal Company with air, seaborne and land-based assaults.
The atmosphere was very tense. I don't think we realised quite how serious it was. Warrant Officer Hillier said to me, Chowns, we've never been as close to war as we are at the moment. And that's because he wasn't a man who joked around. My painting, Angels 3-0, was done during that period. We were always concerned of any aircraft originating northwest in the Baltic or Scandinavia area and coming through into the Atlantic. Usually they kept outside of the Scottish islands of Lewis and South Uist. But if there was a westerly blowing, sometimes they got blown in, and we certainly intercepted them because aircraft were on 2 minutes readiness, which meant that pilots were sitting in the aircraft at the end of the runway, ready to be hooked up, and they could be airborne in 2 minutes. So Britain was at that state of readiness.
For those of you who are unable to see, this is an audio description of the painting.
The painting depicts a busy moment in Operations Room A, located in the bunker at RAF Bentley Priory. It is a landscape painting of muted greens and blues with a plain black frame. The bottom half of the painting is dominated by the large map table showing the British Isles and northern France. The orientation of the map has Scotland on the left with the south coast on the right. There are plaques dotted around the map, and the dozen men and women around the table are busily placing more and moving others with long white sticks. They are wearing white shirts with black ties and have headsets on, which are plugged into the table. Behind the table are more personnel and two brightly lit doorways. A shelving rack of counters runs between the two, and a man is standing in the doorway to the right. On the left of the painting, there is a large tote board which runs from the map table up to the dark ceiling at the very top of the painting. The board is full of information but is illegible to the viewer. Running across the painting in a band from the tote board on the left across to the right-hand side of the painting, overlooking the map table, is the bridge. Again, this is a hive of activity and is full of uniformed personnel sitting and standing, looking down at the table through the glass. The operations room is brightly lit from spotlights on the ceiling. The colours used are very muted. The room and map table are shades of light green, and the personnel and surroundings are shades of blue and green. The most detailed part of the painting is the map table. The personnel are loosely painted, giving a feeling of movement and activity.
They named me the artist for convenience sake, but it was really providing solutions to, at that time, just keeping up with aircraft and the plaques and the war room itself. Creative ideas there that helped the whole system of plotting.
Initially, I did a maquette, a little drawing, which showed the war room. My wife saw it, Meg saw it, and said, "Look, you ought to produce that." So I did. After a while, I wish I hadn't started it, because the geographic dimension in the drawing of the table, because it's a photographic image really, had to be accurate, had to be in the right place. So the table had to have the GRF reference drawn on it in perspective, all in the right places. So I had to start off with drawing the geographic references as a grid, and then pop in the British Isles. I think I actually started with Anglesey, with Valley, RAF Valley, in the right square, and then I worked everything out from there. Now, what you're seeing on that table or around the table are the crew, and they are all portraitures. At about the time of Suez week, which was 1956, one officer is at the back of the painting on the ground floor, as I see the watch. And he used to stand there with his arms akimbo and hands on hips. Very, very strong, very, very smart man. We got on with him well. And he handled the unit extremely efficiently. And each plotter that you see there is a portrait. You see the war room really as a photograph from one of the cabins on the side of the unit, looking down on the table. The totes to the left show you the it's a full state's tote. Scotland is at the top of the tote, and the south of England 11 group at the base. So you've got all the aircraft shown, which are whether it exists, how many are flying, how many are in readiness, how many are in turnaround, and how many that are not serviceable, plus the weather conditions, so that at a glance the officers on the bridge, the air staff, or the officers normally just handling Western Europe, waiting for unidentified aircraft that might be coming down from especially Scandinavia. Russians were flying down to Cuba in those days, what we call bears, quite slow prop jobs. But if they came down and were off the Minch, which is the Western Isles of Scotland, they'd be outside of the Minch. If they were drifting in a bit, which they might do if they were getting a westerly wind, they could be blown a little towards Stornoway. We would intercept and get a visual sighting on them, fly with them for a bit. They were long range, so they laughed at us a little bit, because you must appreciate that a fighter aircraft can't remain airborne 40 minutes to an hour. So you're flying to get to wherever, you've got time to be there, and then you've got to return before you need fuel. So long range aircraft knew very well, and the crews, the Russian flyers, would visually correspond with our pilots. These two unidentified aircraft appeared over the Shetlands. We picked them up. They were unidentified. We couldn't tie up with Uxbridge, who did this. Probably within 48, 56 seconds, we used to think. Their flight plans were tied up quite efficiently, and they could identify an aircraft by knowing where it would be crossing the coast and flying, its direction, its speed, its height, and so on. So they could be identified. And these two aircraft couldn't be. Nothing. So two Javelins were scrambled from Dice. You see the little red dots on Dice Airborne on the tote. And on the table, you've got the plotter in the middle of the table, using a very long rod, very long plotting rod. They had a magnetic tip on the end, and he's putting out, or he's actually flicking back a height change from the raid plaque, a little metal plaque, and he's picking it up on the end of the tip of the rod and flicking it back and letting the magnet go when it's flicking, so that he can then catch the piece coming back in his hand. Is quite a trick you learn to do. At the same time, he's calling for the new height, which the raid orderly from behind him will place next to him on his right hand side, and he can pick that up, in this case with a rod. We wouldn't reach the end of the tip. He's got to pick it up off the table and plonk it out into the raid plaque, probably 6 feet away. That's what he's doing, and he's shouting Angels 3-0 to the raid orderly, hence the name of the painting. That means that the aircraft that he's tracking, the Javelin, it has reached 30,000 feet. This is a good angle of attack to get a visual, that he's got to turn from flying northeast to fly southwest. He's got to turn to fly in alongside the unidentified aircraft to get a visual. From that visual, that it was a Neptune, a Douglas Neptune, long-range surveillance aircraft, normally with the American Air Force. These Neptunes, we thought, were just American flyers who were lost. There was always a bit of rivalry between the RAF and the USAAF and US Navy, and they didn't plot their course with using a Craig computer, a little slide rule with a dial on it, which you plot your course. Things weren't like today with satellite navigation, by the way, nothing like that. It was up to the pilot or the ground control interception to give a flyer their course and position. The Americans used tables of light logarithms, but flying at 10,000-15,000 feet, very cold in unpressurized aircraft, they'd be muffled up wearing thick gloves, and of course going along a line with a finger in a glove, they'd get the wrong line and they'd get the wrong course. So we thought, ha ha, clever us, silly them. Bit juvenile, I agree, but that's the way we were. And they were lost, and so they would transmit for a fix, and or we get a visual sighting and we'd give them a course so they could get back to wherever they were going, somewhere in Europe. The painting had been on the wall, tribute to all the people who fly an aeroplane, because it's not the pilot. The pilot pushes knobs, but this idea that they're flying on their own is not true, that it takes probably 50 to 70 people to fly an aeroplane. And they're handed over, hence it became so ground controlled that Fighter Command finished and became Strike Command.
It was, however, only in later years Dougie found out what those two unidentified aircraft actually were.
So this is Suez Week. We've intercepted that aeroplane. Tongue-in-cheek, I did the painting. And on returning, varnishing the painting, for no reason, I remembered the code word cherry ripe. Now, at that time, internet was reasonably new, but I tapped in cherry ripe, USAF Neptunes, Lockheed Neptunes, and I got a result. Files have been released which revealed that, in fact, these Neptunes were not allowed to fly with USAF markings or US Navy markings. They were actually CIA. This is an American aircraft that were overflying UK, unidentified, no flight plan. They were termed ferret aircraft because they were ferreting information to test Russian defences in the Baltic, to see how quickly Russian forces would actually retaliate and actually go up and meet them and identify them. They were not Americans, they were actually Czechoslovakian pilots that the CIA were using, so in no way could it be said that it was Americans. They had no markings and they were flying out of Wiesbaden. The CIA used this same tactic quite regularly later in other parts of the world, and quite a lot of them got shot down.
As Dougie mentioned, this painting is dedicated to all Cold War airmen and airwomen who served at the bunker during 1955 to 1957, but who are seldom mentioned. You might be interested to know that Dougie himself features in the painting. He can be seen standing in the open doorway holding his yellow signal officer's diary that he still owns to this day. The painting Angels 3-0 is currently on display at Bentley Priory Museum as part of the temporary exhibition Defending Britain from Nazi and Nuclear Threat. I hope you have enjoyed listening to this episode. We will be back in the new year with the next instalment called The Eyes and Ears, The Royal Observer Corp. But until then, I hope you have a lovely Christmas and a happy New Year. Thank you.